So Zmir asked me to talk about the halachas of the 3 weeks, and in order to talk about the halachas of the 3 weeks, we have to start talking about the first day of the 3 weeks, which is Shavasar B'Tammuz. Now this year, Shavasar B'Tammuz falls out on a Shabbat. It's 2 weeks from this coming Shabbat, so the fast is really is the next day on Sunday. So in reality, possibly the 3 weeks in general are really not 3 weeks because it's really 22 days. And this year we may even have 23 days, adding on an extra day for because of Shabbat. So in any event, maybe even 24 if we count the following Sunday. Okay, so let us begin with the first source. The Mishnah Masechet Tanit, source number one, says, Chamisha Dvarim Erat Avoteinu B'Shavasar B'Tammuz V'Chamisha B'Tisha B'Av. There were five events that occurred on Shavasar B'Tammuz and five events that occurred on Tisha B'Av. Now, we're only going to be focusing on the 3 weeks leading up to the 9 days, not on the 9 days itself, and therefore we're going to be focusing now on Shavasar B'Tammuz. So what were these five tragic events that occurred on Shavasar B'Tammuz? And because of them, the Nevi'im instituted a fast day. So the first event, B'Shavasar B'Tammuz Nishtabru Haluchos. B'nai Yisrael, when Moshe Rabbeinu, according to their calculations, was delayed in coming down from Har Sinai, they thought that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to be returning at all. On the 16th day of Tammuz, they build an Egel HaZahav. And on the morning of the 17th, they start celebrating and dancing around the Egel HaZahav. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai. He sees the Egel HaZahav. He sees B'nai Yisrael dancing around the Egel, and he breaks the Luchos. And that was the first tragedy that happened on Shavasar B'Tammuz. The second tragedy is Batel HaTamid, that the Korban Tamid was abolished. The Korban Tamid was a Korban that was brought every day in the Beit HaMikdash, twice a day, once in the morning, once in the late afternoon, without fail, 7 days a week, every day of the year, Shabbat, Yom Tov, Yom Kippur, it was always brought. And then at some point, because of a siege that was laid around Yerushalayim, the Korban Tamid was abolished. Now, when did this happen? It's not so clear. According to the Rambam, this event occurred during the first Beit HaMikdash. It was the time of the Babylonians. There was a siege around Yerushalayim. And because of the siege, they ran out of sheep that they could be bringing, sheep or goats that they could be bringing, sheep that they could be bringing for the Korban Tamid, and therefore it was abolished. According to the Rambam, according to the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, this event happened during a siege during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. But in any event, whether it was during the first or the second Beit HaMikdash, the Korban Tamid was abolished. The third event that occurred, the third tragedy, was Havka'ah Ha'ir, that the city of Yerushalayim was broken into. Now here too, there's a machloket when this occurs. The Gemara Tamanis in the Talmud Bavli tells us that this event must have happened during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. And how does the Gemara know that this event must have happened during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash? Because if you open up Sefer Yirmiyahu, it describes the Chorban Bayit Rishon, and it says very clearly that the Babylonians broke in to the city of Yerushalayim in the month of Tammuz on the 9th day. On the 9th day of the month of Tammuz. And therefore, the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli says, how is it possible that we commemorate the 17th? Aye, we must be talking about the second Beit HaMikdash. In the second Beit HaMikdash, they broke in on the 17th, and because we are suffering more from the Churban Bayit Sheni than from the Churban Bayit Rishon, we commemorate the break-in on the 17th of Tammuz, not on the 9th. The Talmud Yerushalmi has a fascinating statement. And it says, when we commemorate on the 17th of Tammuz, the breaking into the city, we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash. So they ask, aye, but the Sefer Yirmiyahu says that it happened on the 9th. So the Yerushalmi says it's a mistake. What do you mean it's a mistake? How could the Navi be a mistake? Says Yerushalmi, B'nai Yisrael was so distraught by the siege around Yerushalayim, 2.5 year siege by the Babylonians, and they were suffering so greatly that they lost track of time. And they thought that it was the 9th of Tammuz, but it was really 8 days later, and it was really the 17th of Tammuz. See, even though the Navi says it was on the 9th, The breaking into the city during Churban Bayis Rishon also occurred on the 17th of Tammuz, not the 9th. That's what Yerushalmi says. So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal once asked, says, I don't understand. If it was a mistake, the Navi Yirmiyahu wasn't just some calendar keeper somewhere who makes mistakes and then they photocopied it. Yirmiyahu obviously knew, Alpi Nevuah, that it was a mistake. Why was that mistake perpetuated for so many centuries till this very day? Why didn't Yirmiyahu correct it? And if he also lost track of time, why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Yirmiyahu, correct it? Why are we perpetuating this mistake of the 9th of Tammuz? Says Rav Soloveitchik, the mistake is left in the Navi to teach us how terrible and how tragic the Churban was and the siege was, to remind us that it was so horrible that they totally lost track of time. That they didn't even know which day of the month it is. That they lost track of 8 days. And the Navi kept the date, the incorrect date of the 9th of Tammuz, to remind us that even though it was the 17th, look how horrible the siege was, how awful the Churban was, that they didn't even know what day of the month it was. That was the third event that occurred on the 17th of Tammuz. The fourth one, Saraf Apostumus of Satora. Apostumus was some Roman official, and he was angry at the Jews, and before the Churban HaBayis, during the time of the Roman rule, he went into a certain city, a certain village, and he burned the Sefer Torah, and that created a whole, as they would say, a tararam, and the Jews went and complained to the Roman procurator, and they wanted Apostumus to be punished. But in any event, that was in the fourth event. And finally, the last event, there are two different girsa'ot, two different versions of how we should read the text, claims the Yerushalmi. Our text is Vehem Mitzelem Behechal, and he put an idol in the Hechal. If it says, and he put an idol in the Hechal, then it's referring to this Apostumus. So therefore also, during the time of the Roman rule, they put an idol in the Beis HaMikdash itself. That was done by Apostumus, and that was the fifth event that happened on Shavuos HaBetamis. Probably not the same year, but nevertheless, he's put a Tzelem in the Hechal. The Yerushalmi says, though, that there may be another text to the Mishnah, and not Veheemid, and he placed an idol, but rather Vehuamad, and an idol was placed in the Beis HaMikdash, but not necessarily by Apostumus. And if it is Huamad, then Yerushalmi says this was done during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash by the Melech Menashe. Menashe was a king who ruled for, I think, 55 years, I think with the longest reigning king of Yehuda. The son of Chizkiyahu, who was known to be a big tzaddik, Baba Nasha, unfortunately, was a big Rasha, and one of the evil things that he did was he placed, a Jewish king, but he placed an idol in the Beis HaMikdash, and that was done on the 17th day of Tammuz. So we have some events that occurred, definitely, one event that occurred in the Midbar, some events that occurred during Bayit Rishon, that might have occurred during Bayit Rishon, and other events that definitely occurred during Bayit Sheni. This question, yes. At some point it was corrected. I assume that the Jews who were not living in siege in Yerushalayim were able to keep an accurate count. It was those Jews who were living in Yerushalayim who were so distraught that they lost track. Eventually it was corrected, probably not so much later. But at that point, but at the time when it was happening, they thought that it was the 9th of Tammuz. So why do we fast? We fast because we're supposed to fast, but what's the purpose of the fast? So the thing to keep in mind, as the Rambam reminds us in source number 2, is that fast days are not meant to be an obstacle course. Meaning, okay, I wake up this morning, I have to get through the day without eating, without drinking, and if I make it to the end, I passed, Baruch Hashem, that's all I need to do. The Rambam tells us in source number 2, Yesham yamim shekol Yisrael misanim bahem, b'pnei atzarot sheru bahem. There are certain fast days that apply to all of Bnei Yisrael. And why do we have these fast days? Kedei la'orer halavavot liftoach darchei hatshuva. We're fasting for a reason, not just not to eat. We're fasting because we need to do tshuva. And the reason we need to do tshuva, as the Rambam continues, v'yez ezikaron ma'aseinu ha'ra'im u'maasei avoteinu she'yaka ma'aseinu ata. says, our forefathers did terrible things. The first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed primarily because of the three major averos of Avodah Zarah, Gil HaRayis, Shvichas Damim. The second Beis HaMikdash we know because of Sinat Chinam. And if we're still suffering from Churban, it means that we haven't fixed what's been broken. In other words, we haven't rectified our averos. So if our forefathers were doing averos and we're still suffering, it must be because we too are continuing to do that. And therefore, we have to realize that, and a number of special days during the year, we totally focus on that in order to be morer, to wake up our dachei hatshuva, atchegom lahem velanu hatzarot. And therefore, shebezichon dvar meilu nashuv lahetet. So to go through the fast day of Shavuos Betamuz or any of the other fast days and just look at it as, okay, I made it to the finish line because I didn't eat and I didn't drink and now let's go eat and drink, that's not what the fast days are meant to do. And we should really try at some point on all these Taniyot Sibur to focus at least for a little bit of time on the tragedy and to think about what we can do either as individuals or as a community in order to rectify the situation so that hopefully we won't have to continue fasting year after year, generation after generation.
Menashe put the idol in the temple, so that was his sin, but what were all the people then did Avodah Zarah? Why are they held accountable?
If Menashe was able to do it without creating an uprising, it must have been that there were many Jews who were willing to go along with it. Obviously not all of Am Yisrael, but the attraction of Avodah Zarah is something that we don't understand. During Bayit Rishon, that attraction was great. The Gemara tells a story about certain Amoraim who were talking. One of them insulted Menashe. Menashe appeared to him in a dream, and he said to him, if you lived when I, during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, you would be running, paraphrasing, after the coattails of the priest of Avodah Zarah to kiss them. You don't realize how much of an attraction. That doesn't make it mutar, chas v'shalom. But there were many, many Jews who were caught up by the worship of Avodah Zarah during Bayit Rishon. Okay, how far back did these fast days go? So we know that these went back till before the second Beis HaMikdash, till at least the time of Zechariah HaNavi. Zechariah was a Navi who gave Nevuah between Churban Bayit Rishon and the building of Bayit Sheni. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in source number 3 quotes from the Navi Zechariah. It says, Amar Rav Chana Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida, Maidach Siv Komar Hashem Tzvakos, Tzoma Arvi, V'tzoma Chamish, V'tzoma Shvi, V'tzoma Asiri, Yela Beit Yehuda, L'sason U'L'simcha. The Pasuk in Zechariah talks about 4 fast days. The fast of the 4th, the fast of the 5th, the fast of the 7th, and the fast of the 10th. And obviously they're talking about fast in given months. If we start counting the months from Nisan, so the fast of the 4th, Nisan Iyar Sivan Tammuz, so that would be the fast of the 17th day of Tammuz, which would be followed by the fast of the 5th, which would be the next month, which is Av, the fast of the 7th, which is Elul, and then the fast of the 10th, Tevet is the 10th month. So these fast days, which already existed after Churban Bayit Rishon, says the Navi, we're going to become Sason V'Simcha, we're going to become holidays. So the Gemara is a little bit perplexed because you're calling it a fast day and you're calling it Sason V'Simcha. So when is it a fast and when is it Sason V'Simcha? So the Gemara in the continuation of source number 3 says that there are 3 time periods regarding these fast days, regarding Shavuos HaBetamuz and Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia, and Asar B'Teves. There are three time frames. Time frame number one is Bizman Sheyeh Shalom Yulasasun L'Simcha. When there is quote-unquote Shalom, then these days are going to be days of celebration. What's required to be Shalom? So Rashi says that we're not ruled over by the non-Jewish nations. Bnei Yisrael have total freedom to do what they want to do. The tour in the following source, in source number 4, adds on, and the Beis HaMikdash is built. So during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, when we had a Beit HaMikdash, and during part of that time, when Jews had total independence, which wasn't a very lengthy period of time, first they were ruled by the Persians, then they were ruled by the Greeks, then after the Hashmonaim rebelled, so they freed themselves from Greek rule, and they did have real independence for a while, and then they were taken over by the Romans. So during that small time frame that they had a Beit HaMikdash and they were totally independent, then these fast days were days of celebration. That's one time frame. Yesh Gzeirat HaMalchut Tzom. If they are suffering from the evil decrees of the ruling government, then they are mandatory fast days. What happens if it's neither? What happens if we're not suffering from evil decrees, but we don't have a Beit HaMikdash? So what's the story? Ein Gzeirat HaMalchut ve'ein Shalom ratzu mitanim ratzu ein mitanim. If there is neither evil decrees, but we haven't achieved true Shalom, we're still under the foreign rule, we still don't have a Beit HaMikdash, so then these are optional fast days. Ratzu mitanim ratzu ein mitanim. So you'll say, okay, if you want to fast, fast. If you don't want to fast, don't fast. So you might come along and say, 1 second. Maybe we're now at a stage where, on the one hand, we don't have Shalom, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but on the other hand, we're not suffering from evil decrees. So if that's the case, should we now take a poll, and we'll all vote, and decide whether on Shavuos HaBetamiz we should fast or we should not fast? Was it a majority rule? Was it left up to the individual? Well, in any event, before you raise your hand to vote, I know. The Tor points out in the source number 4, in the last 4 lines, he writes, V'ha'idnan, that the Tor lived 700 years ago, and he writes, and nowadays, Ratzu v'nogu lehit'anot, B'nai Yisrael accepted upon themselves from now on, and he's talking many, many centuries ago, that even though at one point it was optional under these circumstances, they decided to accept upon themselves to fast. Lefichach asu lifrotz geder. Therefore, one is not allowed to literally break down the fence. One's not allowed to act independently and say, I don't want to fast. This has become already an established mandatory fast. V'kosh came b'dorot halalu shabav noteni yeshmad vein shalom. And certainly, in our days when we were suffering, says the Tor, from decrees of ruling governments, for sure you have to fast. But even if we're at a time where we're not suffering any evil decrees, but we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, then it's no longer an optional fast day. Now it's mandatory, and everybody has to fast, and we're not going to take it up for any vote. This has been the custom of Bnei Israel for many, many, many centuries, at least 700 years going back to the Tor, and probably even before that. There was a question back there. Yeah. Yes. In other words, you could not have any independence, but at this point you're living under some sort of, let's say, benevolent dictatorship, which is not any evil decrees. Right. Rashi says that Rashi claims we need independence. The Torah says we need independence and Beit HaMikdash. So now we certainly don't have a Beit HaMikdash. How independent we are, I don't want to get into a political discussion over here, but in any event, we certainly accept the Tor's criteria of until there's going to be a Beit HaMikdash, we won't have Sasa V'Simcha. I'm just wondering if there's a distinction between the because... Yes, I said that you could have, in other words, for argument's sake, and during World War II, Jews living in Europe were certainly under Gzeirat HaMalchut, right? But one could say that, Jews living in Europe nowadays don't have, there's no independence, certainly no Beit HaMikdash, but they're not suffering from evil decrees. The Jews living under the rule of the Soviet Union during the communist era were under Gzeirat HaMalchut. Okay, fine. Now, source number 5, begins to discuss, from Shulchan Aruch, begins to discuss some of the details that, the basic details we're familiar with regarding the fast days. Tzomot halalu, these 4 fast days, meaning Shivas HaBetamuz, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia, and Asar B'Teves. Tzomot halalu, chutz mi Tisha B'Av, so now down to 3. Mutar b'rchitza v'sichon mila sasandav v'tash m'shamita, v'in tzorach lahafsik b'em yibod yom. We know that Tisha B'Av is much more stringent than the other fast days, And on Tisha B'Av, there are five restrictions. Eating and drinking is prohibited. Bathing for pleasure, putting on ointments and creams, wearing leather shoes, and marital relations are all usher on Tisha B'Av. And in addition, it's a 24-hour fast. It starts from the night before. These additional restrictions don't apply to the other three fast days, Shivas Batamas, Asar B'Teves, and Som Gedalia. And therefore, the only restriction is eating and drinking, and it's only during the day, at dawn. The fast begins at dawn on the morning of Shivas Batamas, or this year will be delayed one day till Sunday, Shemini, the 18th day of Tammuz. So beginning at the dawn, at daybreak, the fast begins, and the only issue, that's the only thing that's clearly aser, is the issur of eating and drinking until nightfall. Tanis Esther is really in its own category. Tanis Esther certainly didn't exist in the, it's not mentioned by the Navi Zechariah. It's not even clearly mentioned in the Megillah. There may be an allusion to it, but it has its own set of rules. You're correct that it too is only regarding eating and drinking, and it's only during the day. But there's certain little, there's certain leniencies that we have with Tanit Esther that we don't have with the others. Okay. So one of the questions, yes?
As far as these four fast days,
yeah.
There's three minor ones.
Yeah.
Are they also meant to be that women have to fast as well?
Yes.
Or there's
a means? No. Assuming that we're dealing with people who are healthy, right? So even women have to fast. We'll hopefully get to very soon to talk about women who are pregnant, women who are nursing, and that's a separate category in and of itself. But in theory, anybody who's healthy has to fast. It's men and women, equal, same playing field. Now, one of the questions people often ask is, what's the story with brushing your teeth on these minor fast days, relatively minor? Is one allowed to brush the teeth or not? So in source number 6, the Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Misha darko lichotz piv b'shachrit, somebody who normally washes out their mouth in the morning. On a public fast day, it's not proper to do so. Now, that's a very strange language, because what term doesn't the Shulchan Aruch use? Asur. Doesn't say it's forbidden. It says it's not proper. But it doesn't say it's mutter. So it's obviously telling you not to do it. So what's the reason why? So the Mefarshim explain that basically there's a concern. The concern is that if you wash your mouth out, what might you end up doing? Swallowing a little bit of water. And on a fast day, even a small amount of water, we're not allowed to swallow. So we're that you might come to swallow a little bit of water, and therefore, it's not proper to do so. Comes along the Mishnah Brura underneath source number 6, and he says there may be there is some degree of leniency here. In what case? So Mishnah Brura says, Lamebar hachi, ubemakom tsa'ar, if there is tsa'ar, and tsa'ar is a very hard word to define under these circumstances. Does the Mishnah Brura mean pain, or does the Mishnah Brura mean discomfort? Not clear, exactly. But he says, ubemakom tsa'ar, yesh lahati rechitzat peh b'mayim b'chol tanis tzibur, we do allow you to wash your mouth out, rak sheyizaher biyoter lichfof rosho upiv lamata shlo yavo ligrono. In order to, as an extra measure to make sure that you don't accidentally swallow, you should bend over the sink, and you're bending over and you wash out your mouth that way, so then you won't swallow, because if chas v'shalom you tried to swallow, you would end up choking. So that you can do, but it's not allowed as a carte blanche thing, it's only allowed b'makom tza'ar. And even b'makom tza'ar, he says, v'afilu b'tisha ba'av yesh lahatir kishulo tza'ar gadol. And Tisha B'Av, this would be allowed only if there is great tza'ar. Uviyom Kippur, miyesh lahachmir gam bazeh. And Yom Kippur, even in great tza'ar, one has to be machmir. So we have here three categories. We have the three fast days, we have Tisha B'Av, and we have Yom Kippur. Now, why are Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur more chamor? So first of all, we know that the rules of Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur are just more stringent than they are on Shivas Batamos and Tzom Gedalia and Asar B'Teves. Secondly, certainly Yom Kippur is Din Doraita, right, where the other fast days are from the Nevi'im. But there's also another reason why we're more stringent about this issue on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur than on the other fast days. Because on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, you're also not allowed to bathe. I'm not allowed to wash for pleasure. I'm not allowed to wash my face, my feet, my hands, or my mouth. That's also washing. So in addition to the fact that I might swallow, I'm not allowed to wash my mouth out. That's why we're more stringent. If there's great sa'ar, so since it's not for pleasure, I don't know, somebody has a canker sore that's bothering them tremendously, so then on Tisha B'Av would be allowed. But on Yom Kippur, we're even more machmir, and even in great sa'ar, it's not allowed. Now, what's interesting is that the Aruch HaShulchan in source number 7 says, we're not talking about somebody who's brushing their teeth. The Aruch HaShulchan says, if you take a look, you can see exactly what he's describing. Misha dako lichotz piv b'shachrit b'tane tzibur enochot lasot kein dikarov sheyivla bigrono. We're worried that he might swallow. V'yirali d'zeo kishemachnis hamayim ba'omek lipiv, that you put the water deep in your mouth, umale piv lemala, and you raise your mouth, umechalchel hamayim bigrono, and you swish the water out in your throat. What is he describing? Gargling. So if you're gargling, what is much more likely to happen? You'll swallow. Aval kishanot alamayim lepiv v'omit shachuach v'kavanato rak lenakot hashinayim. He says, aside from Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, the Aruch HaShulchan says, if you just want to brush your teeth, bend over the sink, you're allowed to do so. And you don't need to reach that level of what we call tsa'ar. So what we have here is a machloket haposkim. Everybody agrees that if a person is suffering from some degree of tsa'ar, whether it's pain or discomfort, not clear, on Shavuos B'Tammuz and Asar B'Teves and on Tzom Gedalia, one is allowed to wash one's mouth out, brush your teeth, let's say. According to the Aruch HaShulchan, even if you're not suffering from tzar, on the minor fast days, you're allowed to brush your teeth, bend over the sink, don't swallow anything. The thing that's prohibited is gargling, because then there's more of a concern that you might swallow. But on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, where there's an issur to even to bathe and to wash out your mouth, so that should not be done under any circumstances, well, unless one is suffering greatly. Okay. Now, source number 8 discusses the halacha very briefly of 8 and 9 of women who are pregnant and nursing women. Ubaros omeinikos, that's the women who are pregnant, women who are nursing, mitanot b'tisha b'av kederach shemitanot mashlimot b'yom kippur. If a woman is pregnant and is feeling fine, the doctor says there are no special restrictions, it's not a problem, she's in an air-conditioned room, she's doing okay, she should fast on Tisha B'Av just like on Yom Kippur. The same thing with the nursing woman. Aval b'shlosha tzomot acherim, but with the other three fasts, peturot miletanot. Women who are pregnant, who are nursing, do not have to fast on Shavuos B'Tammuz. V'afo b'kein roi shelo tochalna lehitaneg b'machol b'mishtel k'dei kiyom avlad. On the other hand, they shouldn't indulge. Like, just because you're pregnant doesn't mean, unless you have this terrible craving, you shouldn't have ice cream sundaes with whipped cream and sprinkles and everything else. It's Shavuos B'Tammuz. So you can eat and you can drink normally. You don't have to drink small amounts. You can have a regular meal, but you shouldn't indulge yourself in luxuries. Just as a side, if anybody is pregnant and nursing, this year on Tisha B'Av, the rules are somewhat more lenient. We're not going to get into it right now, but because Tisha B'Av is a nidche, is the ninth of Av is on a Shabbos, and it's postponed till Sunday. Tisha B'Av is a nidche, so pregnant and nursing women should check with their local Orthodox Rav before Tisha B'Av, because the rules of a Tisha B'Av that's nidche are more lenient than a regular Tisha B'Av. Now the Ramah, in source number 9, however, doesn't fully agree with the Shulchan Aruch. In source number 9, the Ramah, where the font changes to a lighter font, the Ramah writes, Haga, miu uberos umeinikos shemitztaros harbe ein lesanos. Women who are pregnant, he's not talking about Tisha B'Av, he's talking about the other fast days. Women who are pregnant or are nursing and they're suffering greatly should not fast. Vafilu eina mitztaros, eina mukhiyavos lesanos. Even if they're not suffering, they don't have to fast. Ela shenagu lahachmir. Benos Yisrael, a wonderful pregnant and nursing women who weren't suffering, even though they didn't have to fast on the minor fast days, have a custom to fast. The Mishnah Berurah, however, writes in Zivkot and Hay, underneath source number 9, But if they feel weak, they shouldn't fast. Many poskim, especially here in Eretz Yisrael, will regularly tell pregnant and nursing women, even if they're not suffering, not to fast on the minor fast days. Here in Eretz Yisrael, there's a Masorah, whether it has to do with the heat, I don't know, but they also say it on the Masorah B'Teves, but that they generally, they don't tell, on the minor fast days, they don't encourage the women who are pregnant and nursing to fast. Certainly this year when it's Shavasa V'Tamas and the Nidcha, and it's during the summer, so the common custom is that the pregnant and nursing women don't fast. Even the Rama, who quotes this Chumrah, the stringency, admits that Me'ikara Din, it's not necessary. He only says that there was a custom to fast. And Mishnah Berurah says if they weak, and we assume that Bizmanenu, people are generally aren't as healthy as maybe in some ways as they seem to have claimed, and therefore they don't fast. That's the general common custom when it comes to the three minor fast days. Again, regarding Tisha B'Av, in a normal year, pregnant and nursing women, if they're feeling 100% fine, normally do fast, but in a year that's a nidcha, there are built-in leniencies, and one should check. Okay, this is as far as Shavasa V'Tamas itself is concerned, which brings us to what happens between Shavasa V'Tamas and the beginning of the period that we call the 3 weeks, leading up until the 9 days. The Mishnah in Masechet Tanis in source number 10 says, Mishenichnas Av Mematin B'Simcha. When Av begins, we lessen our joy. But this sounds like when Av begins, we lessen our joy. But what about until Rosh Chodesh Av? It sounds like there are no special restrictions. And the truth is, Midina de Gemara, according to the Gemara, you read the Gemara, Mishnah Gemara, there were no restrictions that applied after Shavasa V'Tamas until Rosh Chodesh Av. All those restrictions that we have came about at a later stage, and we'll see what they are, Bezrat Hashem, in a moment. And developed over a period of time, some of which were accepted by all, some of which were accepted only by some Ashkenazim, not necessarily by Sfardim in certain areas. Now, before we go into discuss the specific restrictions, there's something that's very interesting about the restrictions that lead up from Shavasa V'Tamas till Tisha B'Av. I were to ask you, in what direction do the restrictions go from minor to major, from less severe to more severe, you say, well, the 3 weeks are on the lesser side. When you hit Rosh Chodesh Av, the 9 days increase. When you hit Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week in which Tisha B'Av falls, it increases even more. Erev Tisha B'Av is even more so. Tisha B'Av is the peak. So we go upward. But if you think about somebody who lost a close relative and has a period of avelus, it works in exactly the opposite direction. The most intense period of avelus is at the beginning, Shiva, and even with Shiva, the most intense within Shiva, the first 3 days, Shiva, the rest of Shiva, Shloshim, the degree of intensity lessens, and then somebody who is in avelus for a parent, which continues for another till 12-month period in total, that's even less. So why is it, using the language of the Rishonim, we talk about Avelus Yishana, that's the Avelus mourning, something that happened a long time ago, the Churban, where we go up, and Avelus Chadasha, when somebody lost a close relative, the intensity goes down. Soloveitchik explained, once he explained it, it's very simply, but it takes brilliance to explain things simply. He says, in Avelus Chadasha, Chazdal didn't see any need to try to get us into the mode of avelus. When a person loses a close relative, my natural instinct is to feel a tremendous sense of mourning. And what the avelus restrictions are is to a certain extent a reflection of my psyche. It's very intense at the beginning, but then we learn to cope slowly. It's hard, but we learn to cope. We go from the first 3 days till the end of Shiva, Shloshim, and then as we continue through the rest of the year, the sense of loss never disappears, but that tremendous blow that we felt at the beginning feels less and less. But when it comes to Avelis Yeshana, Chazal understood us very well. If out of the blue we would say, by the way, tomorrow is Tisha B'Av, But today we can do whatever we want to. Tisha B'Av would come and go. We wouldn't get into that sense of mourning. We need time to reacquaint ourselves with Churban, because the whole year we just don't focus on it. So Chazal said, okay, you have to start getting into the Churban mode. Just like we find when it comes to Yom Kippur. If Yom Kippur came out of the blue, if we didn't have an Aseres Yemei Tshuva, if we didn't have a Chodesh Elul, all of a sudden just Yom Kippur. Like, the Arab Yom Kippur is fine, Yom Kippur, and then it wouldn't work. We need Elul, and we need blowing the shofar in the Ashkenazi custom, and then we need the Slichos, and then we need Rosh Hashanah, we need Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and then we need Yom Kippur. So then hopefully by Ne'ilah we're there. So too, by Tisha B'Av also, we need the 3 weeks leading into the 9 days, leading into Shavuot Shechalba, leading into Erev Tisha B'Av and Tisha B'Av. So hopefully by then, we'll feel the sense of Churban. Okay, so what are some of the restrictions of the 3 weeks? The Ramah in source number 11 says, V'noagim lahachmir she'ein nosim miyudzayim betamaz ve'elach adachar Tisha B'Av. The first thing is that there is a minog that we don't get married during the three-week period. Now, this is mentioned by the Ramah, not by the Mechaber, and Svardim don't necessarily have this custom. Rav Avadi Yosef said there was not a custom among Svardim to restrict marriages. Their restrictions only begin on Tisha B'Av, but we have a custom not to get married during the three-week period. That's the Ashkenazi custom. However, the Mishneh Berurah points out underneath in source in Sivkat and Yutet, Eirusin, which literally in the Gemara's language means betrothal, there are no restrictions, and certainly to get engaged, what we call modern Hebrew Eirusin, to get engaged is not a problem during the 3 weeks. A person is allowed to get engaged during the 3 weeks. A person is even allowed to get engaged during the 9 days. The Gemara says I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but the Gemara says in theory you could get engaged even on Tisha B'Av, lest someone change their mind after Tisha B'Av. So strike while the iron is hot. You never know what after Tisha B'Av somebody might change their mind. So, And in terms of an engagement party of sorts, like people make a l'chaim, a vort, so l'chaim is permissible. The Shar HaTzion at the very bottom of the page writes in the last line, Vayin Sham Debesudat Shiduchit. Sudat Shiduchit means in what we would call an engagement meal party, have a mitzvah kamo sudat erusin, and therefore would in theory be permissible. However, one should keep in mind what the Mishneh Berurah writes in the line above. It says, va'asur la'asot rikudim u'mecholot miyadzayim v'tamuz ve'elach. We don't have any sort of celebratory dancing during the entire three-week period. So celebratory dancing is prohibited during the entire three-week period. Even if you're going to, somebody's going to get engaged and you want to have a vart of sorts, that's fine, but there would be no dancing that would be allowed during that time period.
Now, except on Shabbos.
On Shabbos, we'll see that there are certain leniencies, maybe things that are normally done, so we don't have public avelus on Shabbos. Connected to Rikudim and Mecholos, which is a discussion in and of itself, is the listening to music. And that is that 20th century poskim, when music became so readily available through all sorts of recordings, talk about restrictions during the three-week period of listening to music. This, you know, people talk about it twice during the year, during the Sfir period and during the 3 weeks. And it's connected to a certain extent to Rikudim and Mecholos, and therefore certainly listening to live instrumental music during the three-week period is prohibited. There's a whole discussion amongst the poskim. What about recorded music, and what about if it's not instrumental, if it's a cappella? Certainly, once one begins the 9 days, and you're really supposed to be mamait besimcha, then one should refrain from any type of music, unless it's, of course, I guess, very sad, so to speak, Tisha B'Av songs of sorts. Whether recorded music or a cappella is permissible is a machloket haposkim. If we start talking about it, we won't finish. So just realize that it's probably even more stringent than Sfirat HaOmer. Sfirat HaOmer is a somewhat lesser stringency. The 3 weeks a little bit more, and there's more of Avelus there. So one should try to keep it in mind that that's part of our concept, is to get in the sense of Avelus. Okay, what are the other restrictions that occur? So in source number 12 on the second page, the Rama writes about Tisporet Noagim Lahachmi Miyadzayim B'Tammuz. We have a custom not to get haircuts beginning on Shavasa B'Tammuz for the 3-week period. There might be two restrictions involved. Some Achronim suggest, like the Magen Avraham says, that one is not allowed to get a haircut even the Kavod Shabbos, because you don't need to get a haircut once a week. So the Chassam Sofer says that may be true regarding haircuts, but what about men who shave regularly? Are they allowed to shave L'Kavod Shabbos? So we're not talking about somebody who has a beard, but somebody who's normally clean-shaven, shaves every day. So by the time Shabbos comes along, they look somewhat disheveled. So are they allowed to shave during the 3-week period? This is a machloket haposkim. There are poskim who allow somebody who's normally clean-shaven to shave on Erev Shabbos during the 3-week period up until the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Av, up until the 9 days. Whereas other poskim say no, that one should not shave, even somebody's normally clean-shaven, during the entire 3-week period. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Negros Moshe writes, and this is well-known, certainly in Chutz Laaretz, this is a problem, that men who work in, whether it's in business, but work in a community that's not a Jewish religious community, if they're normally clean-shaven and they don't shave for 3 weeks, they look terribly disheveled, and it's just not acceptable. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, if for financial reasons, in terms of your job, one would be allowed to shave, if one's normally clean-shaven, up until Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the last few days of the 3-week period, of the 9 days, and the week when Tisha B'Av falls, those days you shouldn't shave, and you would explain to your boss that, you know, we have a major tragedy that we're commemorating, and therefore, but up until Shavua Shechalbo, if it's necessary, one could shave. Here in Eretz Yisrael, generally speaking, that's usually not the case. First of all, the social dress in offices is much, much more lax. Almost anything goes anywhere. So the fact that a person hasn't shaved in a while usually isn't an issue. Yeah.
Question. This year, because it's a nitka, the Shavua Shel Chalba begins...
So this is a machlok. This is a machloket haposkim, which is, it's very relevant for Sfardim, because there are many restrictions that Ashkenazim have for the 9 days that Sfardim have only Shavua Shechalbo.
Well, it depends where they come from.
Right. And there are, it's a machloket haposkim, how I deal with the Tisha B'Av, which should, when Tisha B'Av is the Sunday, so then there is no Shavua Shechalbo. When Tisha B'Av is on a Shabbat, but it's postponed, so that's a machloket haposkim when the Shavua Shechalbo applies. Just very briefly, because time is going very quickly, there are poskim, in source number 17, quotes that there are poskim who say that regarding haircuts, there may be more of a leniency for women than there is for men. Because we find that during the Avelus period of Shloshim, we're more lenient with women getting haircuts than we are with men getting haircuts. So there are poskim who allow women to get haircuts during the 3 weeks. On the other hand, it's somewhat paradoxical because women tend to get haircuts much less often than men get haircuts. And therefore, even though they might have a leniency according to some poskim, but the need to make use of that leniency is much less. Regarding other things in source number 18, he points out...
I think it might be actually much greater because of the... Why is the one... No one sees a lot of women's hair.
Like saying married women, certainly that poskim say for sure, if it's to cut hair that's sticking out from underneath a shetel or from some sort of head covering, so that for tznias purposes, the poskim definitely allow. But I'm talking about getting a regular haircut. And source number 18, the poskim point out that the way that it's quoted here is that a married woman or a woman of marriageable age may shave her legs even during the 9 days. I teach in a seminary, they all want to know what's marriageable age, et cetera. So I guess if they're already worried about it, so then there's definitely leniencies. The last restriction, just very briefly, is the question of reciting Shehecheyanu during the 3-week period. This is a machloket haposkim. The Shulchan Aruch says that one should not say Shehecheyanu if it's not absolutely mandated. What's absolutely mandated? For instance, at a Pidyon HaBen, or according to some customs, at a Bris Milah, you say Shehecheyanu. So if that during the 3 weeks, of course you say it. But can a person buy a new item of clothing, you know, a fancy item of clothing requires Shachianu, or a fruit that's new in the season. And saying Shachianu, the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion that one should not recite Shachianu during the 3 weeks. The Vilna Gaon is of the opinion that one could recite Shachianu during the 3 week period. Poskim suggests that sort of a compromise of leniency that maybe on Shabbos during the 3 weeks, if you want to recite Shachianu, you have a new fruit that you find, new seasonal fruit. So that should be done maybe on Shabbos during the 3 weeks. Okay, we'll stop here, and I think Mrs. Tarragon is good to start speaking. Okay. Hopefully, Bezrat Hashem, this was all a lahalacha v'lo lamaisa, that by the time Shavasar B'Tamas comes along, we will be celebrating it l'sasa l'simcha.